Welcome to the second half of your first class on understanding Brexit. I forgot to tell you that this is the address of my blog. You need to know this. All important information is on the blog. If the room changes, if I am sick or on strike or dead, no, if I'm dead, it won't be on the blog, will it? Never mind. All important information is on here. I will also put on here some links to some more videos which you may look at if you like, and so on. And when I get to the end of the PowerPoint in three weeks' time, I will put the PowerPoint up on the blog as well. Everything happens on the blog. That's where the excitement is. Okay. So let me get back to the position we were at, which was the beginning of the story. We have to take you right back to the beginning of the European Union. After 1945. So, of course, 1945, people very happy that the war was over. Everybody was expecting there to be a horrible economic crisis after the war, just like there was in the 1930s. They were absolutely wrong. It was the biggest boom in the history of capitalism, an enormous boom. You went into Paris and into London and in Berlin, all the children were wearing shoes. That was the boom. In the 20s, you didn't buy shoes for children. They don't last long enough, yeah? And so that's people, working class people, had toilets inside their houses in the 1950s for the first time. It is amusing, but it's not that much fun if you have them outside. People lived much longer. Infant mortality went right down in France, Germany, Britain, Italy, Spain. This was the boom. We always say in French, les trente glorieuses, and we hear the expression glorieuse so often, we get a little bit bored with it. But I think it may be the correct expression. It really was the most incredible quality of life for working class people. People couldn't believe it. Yeah. In the 1930s, my grandmother, in the 1930s, if their children were ill, they went to get a doctor. But the adults didn't go to see a doctor. It was too expensive. You know, just for the children and so on. And this was typical. These were not the poorest people. These were ordinary working class people. So the 1950s was something incredible, and people imagined it would continue forever. C'est très important de voir que après 29 ans des 30 glorieuses, les gens n'étaient pas là. Il ne reste qu'un an. No, they were convinced it would continue forever. People were convinced that mass unemployment would never come back. Now, as you know, this was not true, and we're back in there now. So, meanwhile, in Europe, the world economy was having its effect. The great victor of the Second World War was, of course, America, the biggest economy in the history of the world, and the most dominant country in the history of the world, much bigger than the Roman Empire, and certainly they went around trying to show that they were the biggest in Korea, in Vietnam. It was not very pretty. But from an economic point of view, France and Germany were saying, the elite in France and the elite in Germany were saying, if we want to compete with America, we need an alliance. And so the beginnings of the European Union with the European Iron and Steel Community were getting together to be a bigger bloc. And this is the idea, of course, of the European Union, to be a powerful bloc against the United States, or today China, and so on. Now, Britain was not so interested. This is not because the British are stupid. No, the British are stupid, okay. But that's not the reason. The reason is the British elite and the British business had more choice. The French, Europe was the essential place to export things. The British had more choice. They could rely on America, still the biggest. They could rely on the ex-colonies, the Commonwealth, whether it be the settlement colonies like Canada, Australia, New Zealand, all English-speaking, or the ex-domination colonies like India, Kenya, South Africa. Yeah. So they could trade with Europe or with America and the English-speaking things, or with the ex-colonies. So Europe was one option. And so the British economy has always been interested in Europe, but not very interested in Europe. And that's and this is the reason, of course, that, for example, the euro was never accepted in England. In a way, this is quite surprising. Because perhaps you can imagine, being the only country in Europe with a different currency, from an economic point of view, is a really bad thing, you know. So in Japan, if they want to sell cars to Europe, they have to have one book explaining how to do it in Europe and another book explaining how to do it in Britain, yeah. So it was a bit risky to stay outside the euro, but they did it. Of course, the British have an amazing advantage, and that is the language. Because, again, if you take a Japanese company, say, we want a headquarters in Europe. We need 100 Japanese managers to go to Europe to establish our headquarters in Europe. Now, can we have 100 Japanese managers who speak French? Oh, no. English. Yeah. And so the Japanese company puts their headquarters in London, not because London is the best place in the world, but because they want to tell Japanese, but you go and live in London with your family. And because it speaks English, it's possible. Well, you know, moving to a country where you don't speak the language at all is much harder. So the language is worth billions and billions of dollars, in fact, and also is the reason I have a job, so I'm not complaining. So let's go back to what happens when France and Germany try to start building Europe, and they negotiate with a few more countries, and they have the EWG, the European Economic Community in German. This is a German cartoon. And who is this? Who is this gentleman? What country does he represent? Yeah, sorry? No, Britain. C'est le drapeau britannique là, c'est son chapeau. So this is Britain, and he is in the waiting room, la salle d'attente. And somebody is putting out a sign here, Nicht für Engländer. What does that mean in English? Yeah, no English people allowed. And who is doing it? Who is this gentleman? Oui, c'est Charles de Gaulle. Il est toujours dessiné comme ça. Okay, so this is a humorous cartoon, of course, showing a very real situation. Charles de Gaulle did not want Britain in the European Economic Community. And indeed, in 1963, the British said, can we please join? And Charles de Gaulle gave the veto, no. And in 1967, they asked again, can we please join? And Charles de Gaulle said no. This was possible because, of course, I think it had to be agreed by a unanimous vote, and so, you know, France was an important country, they could say no. The English were not very happy with Charles de Gaulle, yeah? They never really liked him, I don't think, although, you know, ici Londres, le général Charles de Gaulle. Yeah. So there you get the situation. Now, why did Charles de Gaulle not want the British in there? Anybody know why he didn't want the British? Well, he didn't trust them for two reasons. Firstly, he thought they were too close to America. He thought that Britain would be the voice of America in the European Economic Community. I don't know if it's true or not, but he really did. At this time, you know, Charles de Gaulle was never a great pro-American. For some good reasons, yeah? For some good reasons, yeah? And so there was always this tension, yeah? For Charles de Gaulle wanted France and Germany to be at the centre, especially France, normal, and so didn't want... And secondly, he said that the English economy was too weak. And it's true that in the 50s and 60s, the British economy was a little weaker than France and Germany's economy. Although the British elite did manage to do one thing, I don't know if they did it by accident or if it was intelligent, and that is that the British elite did decolonization without a major war. Yeah, there was no guerre d'Algérie for Britain. Now, I don't know if this was a happy accident or that they were more intelligent, I don't know, but it's true that there was no major war in the decolonization. There were some smaller conflicts in Kenya, and just recently the British had to give a lot of money to some Kenyan men who were tortured by the British back 30 years ago. So it wasn't very pretty, but there was no major war, which is, you know, can only be considered to be a good thing. So the Britain wanted to get in 63. Can we come in, please? No. Nicht für Engländer, said Charles de Gaulle. And the British were very unhappy. And this is a British cartoon criticizing Charles de Gaulle. Here is Charles de Gaulle. And in the, of course, this is an English cartoonist, yeah? He's criticising Charles de Gaulle, and Charles de Gaulle is imagining himself as Charles Bonaparte, Charles Magne, Charles XIV, Louis XIV, Charles XIV. Okay, so it's just an attack on Charles de Gaulle. I like to use political cartoons because they make it a little bit more lively. And what is he saying? L'Europe, c'est moi. So the English were not so happy with being refused by General de Gaulle, of course. So we move on to the 1970s, Enfin, c'est pas tout à fait vrai ce que j'ai écrit là. Là, je vais le corriger. Britain joins the European Union under the leadership of the Conservative government in 1973. So they do join in 1973. However, it's still very controversial. They joined the European Economic Community, which then has, I think, 9 members. So it's a very different animal from the European Union. It doesn't have 27. It has 9, including Britain. So it's much smaller. So they join in 1973, and Edward Heath, who was the Conservative Prime Minister, and probably the only really enthusiastic, the only British Prime Minister enthusiastic about Europe. It has to be said that British people enthusiastic about Europe 10 years ago were very difficult to find. In general, the question of the European Union was considered in Britain to be as interesting as watching paint dry or something like that. You know, it was not considered to be very interested. But Edward Heath was the exception. He really believed in Europe. He had been in Germany in 1945 and seen the terrible destruction, and he believed that the European Union was going to help peace. But in any case, Britain joined the European Union in 1973, but without much enthusiasm. A whole section of the left, a whole section of the Labour Party, said we should leave again. So when the Labour Party came into government in 1974, so, you know, shall we leave again? Join in 73, 74, shall we leave again? And the problem the Prime Minister had, the new Labour Prime Minister, Harold Wilson, the one who smoked the pipe, there you go, I knew that, he had a problem. The Labour Party was completely divided. On the one hand, many people in the Labour Party in the 1970s said, oh, the European Economic Community, this will help trade, it's good for business, etc. And on the other hand, a big section of the Labour Party said, no, the European Economic Community is fundamentally neoliberal. It's a boss's club. It's a club of rich countries that will work against Africa and against the poorer countries of the world. It will help the bosses to work together to make life harder for trade unions and for socialist planning in general. We don't want it. So the Labour Party completely divided, and the Prime Minister didn't know what to do. There was a risk that the Labour Party would split into two parties. Now, this is never good when you're a political party and it's a headache. And so the Labour Prime Minister came up with a new idea. Let's have a referendum. This was completely new. It was the first national referendum in the history of Britain, 1975. So they joined in 1973, and then they had a referendum in 1975. Shall we stay in or shall we leave? Yeah. And the arguments in the 1970s referendum were very different from the ones in 2016. In fact, it's almost a mirror image. The referendum in 1975 was called because the left was divided and the Labour Party was in danger. The referendum in 2016 was called because the right was divided and the Conservative Party was in danger. So it's one of those things about history almost repeating itself. So, the left divided. Here you have the logo, the 1970 logo of the campaign to stay in the European Economic Community. And you can see you have the British flag and this beautiful bird which represents... What does this bird represent? Thank you. Peace, yes. It's in the Bible, you know, when they get all the rain and the animals two by two and then... you know, and then Noah sends a dove to come, and he comes back with an olive branch in his. It's a good book. You should read it. Okay, Keep Britain in Europe was the slogan, the logo of the campaign to stay in the EU. And here is the logo of the campaign to leave. The campaign to leave in 1975. The campaign, let's leave the EU out of the EU. Of the EEC. It's not called the European Union yet. It's the European Economic Community, or what we sometimes call the common market. Out and into the world, yes. The world is big. The EEC is a small rich man's club. We don't want it. That's the argument of that. And of course, so these are political campaigns. So they have to be snappy, visual, and so on. Although this style is very 1970s style, really, very 1970s style. So the 1975 poster for the Leave campaign. The campaign in Britain. I was involved in the campaign in Britain in 1975. Yeah, I'm very old. And I went out giving leaflets, you know, and I campaigned for yes. I campaigned to stay in the European Union, in the European Economic Community, whereas in 2016 I campaigned to leave. So, yeah, I've changed my mind. You know, what can you do? Okay. So I went and knocked on people's doors. This is a cartoon from 1975 from the people who wanted to stay in the EEC, and they are mocking the people who want to leave, because they say, here are the people who want to leave: Scottish nationalists, Trotskyists, National Front, communists are in Jordan. That's the message of the cartoon. Yeah, they're all different. You've got the Trotskyists. And this is, of course, the kind of political argument you still see today. Yeah, that if you have a position and somebody says, Marine Le Pen a la même position que vous sur ça, et donc vous êtes la même quelque part. It's a very old method of political debate. These are famous people from the time. This is Tony Benn, a left-wing leader of the Labour Party, and Michael Fort also. This is an extreme anti-Catholic Protestant Northern Ireland politician, and so on and so forth. So, but this cartoon is just to mock the Brexiteers of the time. Of course, we didn't have the word Brexit at the time. This was the people leaving it. Yeah, in the London Evening Standard, this cartoonist, who was in favour of the UK staying in the European Economic Community, makes fun of the very varied opponents of the EEC. Now, the Labour government at the time was in favour. It was a very confused situation, because the government, the Prime Minister and the government, said, vote yes, please vote yes. But the Labour Party voted against. So you have to say, c'est un petit peu comme si Monsieur Macron dit qu'il est pour X. Et son parti en marche, son congrès vote dans l'autre sens. So it was a political crisis. It was a political crisis. So this is the official. This was the booklet which was received by every house in the country. Every house in the country received this. Her Majesty's government has decided to recommend to the British people to vote for staying in the community. Harold Wilson, Prime Minister. So, as well as the campaign for and the campaign against, you have the official government booklet, which of course is very influential. Just before the referendum, Harold Wilson, the Prime Minister, had negotiated with the European Economic Community and had won some little concessions. And he pretended they were big concessions. C'est de bonne guerre, yeah. That's how it went. We're still in 1975. There was a high level of tension between the different wings of the party. And in fact, the rather unusual thing which happened at this time is that a Prime Minister, in the cabinet, I think there were six or seven ministers who were in favour of leaving the EEC, and 22 ministers who were in favour of staying. And very unusual situation, Harold Wilson said, Everybody can campaign for what they want. So some ministers campaign for a yes, and other ministers campaign for a no. This is politically extremely rare. It's not generally a good idea, because it's not usually considered to be good to show the public that you are very divided. Yeah, people don't like divided parties. But he had no choice, and so you have this bizarre situation where you had some ministers saying yes and some ministers saying no. And the result was that, well, of course you know this, the British voted in favour of remaining in the European Economic Community. 67% yes, 33% no. So a fairly clear decision, which solved the political crisis. The referendum in 2016, because it's 52-48, will not solve the political crisis, because the people who lose will not accept the result. Whereas 67-33, you know, it was over. So inside the Labour Party, many people were happy, and those people who disagreed said, "Well, you know, I'm not happy with that, but it's a majority. It's democratic. It's okay. That's the end of the story. We're inside the European Economic Community." Nevertheless, I think about 30% did not vote. Yeah, there's always this question of the participation. The newspapers the next day. Here are the newspapers the next day. Most of them very happy. "Europe, here we come," says the Daily Mail, conservative newspaper. Daily Mail, "A day in history. Great Britain goes into greater Europe." A very interesting idea, yes. "Don't worry, we're still great. Don't worry, we're still great, yeah. And we're going to be greater. Into greater Europe." Okay, so all shows. Or the Daily Express, again, conservative newspaper. "We're in." Daily Telegraph, "Britain welcomed into Europe. Better opportunities for everyone." Okay. So as the years went by, things changed, because the European Economic Community was initially built during the boom, during the Trente Glorieuses, and nobody was expecting the crisis. After 1974, you got the economic crisis in every country. Unemployment was not 2% anymore, not 3%, 4%, 5%, but 10%, 12%, as you know. We were very surprised. I remember the first time there were 1 million unemployed in Britain, and it was a shock. Today there are 3 million, and nobody's shocked. Yeah, it was a really terrible thing to happen. The 1970s was interesting, because everybody was optimistic. The conservatives were optimistic about capitalism, and the left wing were optimistic about socialism. But everybody was optimistic, and I sometimes get the impression that today everybody is pessimistic on both sides. You know, it's the terrible weight of the new. But it's not my fault. Okay, the 1960s then, Thatcher and the European Community. Basically, in the 1980s then, the crisis, high unemployment, a very heavy neoliberal policy from Margaret Thatcher, of course. I know you know a little bit about Margaret Thatcher. Privatisation, privatise the gas, privatise the electricity, privatise the railways, privatise reduce the power of the trade unions. This was Margaret Thatcher. Reduce the power of the local government, and really a standard neoliberal revolution, if you like, centrality for business and neoliberalism, which has gone much further in Britain than in France. As you know, if you go to university in Britain, you pay €11,000 a year for something like this. €11,000 a year. Now that's, and in France, how much do you pay? €400, something like that, a few hundred euros, yeah. Very interesting difference, because what's more, in France today, no politician can say, "I think students should pay €11,000 a year." No politician can say that. It's suicide. It's political suicide to say something like that, because, you know, nobody wants to do it. Yeah, yeah. Can you imagine? Even those people who don't really like demonstrations, if they said you must pay €11,000, you go on the demonstration. You know, it's just too big. Yeah, and so the neoliberalism in Britain has gone much further. For example, pensions, les allocations de retraite, are privatised. Yeah, you individually save up money for your individual pension. So it's a completely different system to here. In any case, as a part of this, Margaret Thatcher wanted to reduce the amount of money being paid by Britain into the European Economic Community, than the European Union. And here you have a picture of Margaret Thatcher, and these are this is Giscard d'Estaing, I think, yeah? These are the European leaders, and she has, you know, she has given them a good kicking. Yeah, I don't know if this is probably a British cartoon. Certainly, Margaret Thatcher is well known for having gone to the European Union and said, "I want my money back," and she had some success in getting a reduction for British contributions. Now, the reason for this is not really the psychology of Margaret Thatcher. It's because, the reason I said before, Britain had more choice. Britain could say, well, we like being in the European Union, but we could leave. Whereas a French government has great difficulty saying something like that, because Europe is so central to the economy. And so, because Britain had more choice when they... Because, of course, you know, the elites of different countries they're very polite, but they're often in conflict in reality. And so Margaret Thatcher had some success in getting Britain to pay less. And here you have a British cartoon about the conflict between Margaret Thatcher and Jacques Delors, qui était, je ne sais pas quel était là, bon, il était représentant de l'Union Européenne, en tout cas, à l'époque. And here you can see the problem that they have. The reason, according to this cartoon, the reason that they're in conflict, yeah, my patient thinks she's de Gaulle, yeah, and Delors, oh, my patient thinks he's Napoleon. Now, this is amusing, of course, but it also does represent something which the media like to do. They like to portray a picture as a psychological problem. Because it's simpler. It's simpler, you know. Oh, she's arrogant, he's stupid. It simplifies the situation. But as I will be trying to explain, in reality, it's not a psychological problem. It isn't. But there you have. So Margaret Thatcher dressed as General de Gaulle, non, and Monsieur Delors, the representative of the EEC on the other side, the Euroclash that will decide Britain's fate. Cummings is a very well known conservative political cartoonist in Britain. Who do you have in France as the big political cartoonist? Plantu is the most well-known, yeah? That's quite a good job as a cartoonist. Front page of Le Monde every day? That's a good job as a political cartoonist. Yeah, he's been very, very, very successful. Here's another political cartoon. This is Cummings again. Showing the difference between 1972 and 1980. Yeah. What is the reference? What is the reference? Say again? I can't hear you. Sherlock Holmes. Can you speak louder? Le Cheval de Troyes, voilà. Yes, the Trojan horse, thank you. The Trojan horse from Virgil's Aeneid 2. Timeo Danaus et Dona Ferentes. I can quote parts of it to you in Latin, but I won't. Okay, yes, that they left a horse inside the city walls as a present, but inside the horse there were soldiers. You know this story, that there were soldiers hidden. And so in this case, here is the horse. This is Edward Heath. Genuine good European will do whatever the common market orders. But inside the horse was Margaret Thatcher, who comes out later tax. Okay? It's not very sophisticated, but it is a view of what happened in the 1980s. So in the 1980s, more tension. I think this is the moment when it was decided that Britain would not use the euro. Now, this was a slightly unusual decision in a way, because they refused to join the exchange rate mechanism, which means that a fixed exchange rate between the pound and the other currencies. But in fact, the Bank of England worked very hard so that there was not much change. So in fact, they refused to join the euro, but they stayed very close to the rules of the euro, in fact. That's also because if you want big companies from Japan, America, to invest in Britain, you must not have the pound going up and down all the time, because companies don't like that. They don't mind if it's low or high, but it must be fairly stable, yeah? And that's why. Of course, it's going down now. And now is a very good time to go on holiday in Britain, because it's not so expensive if you have money in euros, yeah? Because the pound is very weak. And indeed, it was in the 2000s that the question of the pound was at the centre of debates. Should we join the euro? Is Britain going to join the euro? Of course they weren't. And already, this is in 2000, a long time ago, 20 years ago, before anybody had invented the word Brexit, you had this cartoon. Can you see this is the European table? Everybody's sitting round a table for dinner. Except that the British are going to have their dinner. They are part of the European Union, but not really. This is a long time before the Brexit, yeah. So the tension, it goes back a long way. It's not new. Even though the actual vote for the referendum was an enormous surprise, and here we have a newspaper. Some of the conservative newspapers, in particular, were very angry at the European Union at this time, and in particular at Jacques Delors. This is a very famous front page of the Sun. This is the tabloid newspapers. You don't really have them in France. You have them in Germany with Bildzeitung and so on. The Sun, they are against the ECU. The ECU is what you had before the euro. The newspaper is saying, à midi demain, que tout le monde se tourne vers la France, et lui donne le droit d'honneur. En fait, c'est l'équivalent anglais du droit d'honneur. Oui, ça vole pas haut. Et vous voyez qu'en anglais, ça rime. Up yours, Delors. C'est une référence à la partie de l'autonomie où il voudrait qu'il mette son projet. Ok, donc c'est le côté élevé de la culture britannique, presque. Ok, so up yours, Delors. Very, very famous, one. Which brings us into then the referendum campaign of 2016. That is only 2 years ago, the referendum campaign. First of all, the reason for the referendum, and the reason for the referendum was the exact mirror image of the reason for the referendum of 75. The problem was David Cameron, the leader of the Conservative Party, realised that the Conservative Party was divided. Now, this is slightly unusual. In general, the Conservative Party is the party of business, and business was not divided. Business was generally 90% in favour of staying in the European Union. However, in the situation in Britain over the last 10 years, high unemployment, some rise of the far right, the racist right, you know, oh, what's the problem? The problem must be the immigrants. Yeah, you know, this is what happens when you have high unemployment. People find, in my opinion, ridiculous explanations for the crisis. And so in this context where there was a rise of the racist right, some sections of the Conservative Party said, oh yes, you know, we're against all these Polish and Czech and Romanian immigrants, you know. And so you had a section of the Conservative Party in favour of Brexit, even though, probably half, even though almost all of business wanted to remain. So you have the division on the right. So on the right, which is this is your right, okay? On the right, you have the Conservatives. You have the Conservatives, divided, remain, and leave. You have the far right, the United Kingdom Independence Party, Brexit, and quite a racist party. On the left, you have the Labour Party, divided, mostly remain, but with a certain number of people who, hey, the European Union is against nationalisation. This is true. Yeah, the European Union is not democratic, the European Union is against trade unions, etc., these kind of arguments. So you had the left Brexiteers and the right Brexiteers, and you have the left Remainers and the right. This is why it's complicated, yeah? And then right over here you have the far left, the revolutionary left, who were mostly Brexit. Very small. There's Billy and Jane, and very small group. So the referendum campaign started in 2016, and it was very surprising because it also came at a strange moment politically. This was the réseaux sociaux had become really rose from after 2010, you know, Facebook and so. And politically, people didn't understand exactly how to use them. So you've got the invention of the meme, of course, if you got a good story, it could spread very, very quickly. We talk about it going viral. And then so you had a lot of that going on. And then at the same time, you had the traditional approach to politics in Britain. At election time, the parties go and knock on the door of every house in the country in Britain. This wouldn't work in France. They wouldn't open the door. But it's literally the truth. I used to do this in the 1970s. You go and you knock on the door and say, oh, good morning. I'm sorry to bother you. I'm from the Labour Party. Can we count on your votes? It's very polite, Britain. And very often they would say, oh, I'm very sorry. We're Conservatives. Sorry, yeah. In any case, what you do is you note down, yeah, number 27 said they will vote Labour. And then on the day of the election, in front of the election station, you say, oh, hello, you're going to vote. What's your voting number? They are not obliged to give it you, but they always do, because they're British. Okay. At 4 o'clock in the afternoon, you say, all right, number 27 promised to vote Labour, and they haven't been to vote yet. Would you like a car to take you to the polling station? Yeah. This would only work in Britain because they're so polite, you know, so they play the game. Yeah. And that's the traditional way of voting. And then you have the new way of this, the social networks and so on going on. So let's see what that gave up. But first of all, a little bit of a question here. This is a poster, or a meme if you like, it's a poster. Is it in favour of leave or remain? This is a remain poster. You can see I'm in. That's the slogan, I'm in. What is the blue thing? Europe, yeah? And this is Britain. This is Britain, and this is Europe. What do you think about this poster? Yeah, don't leave it, lead it. Il ne faut pas qu'on quitte l'Europe, il faut qu'on le dirige. And there you see the picture of Europe as a horse with Britain as the rider. C'est un peu arrogant quand même, non? En fait, c'est une affiche qui était dessinée pour la campagne de Remain, mais qui n'a pas été utilisée parce que la direction, c'est un peu arrogant quand même. Okay, donc ils ont bien fait de ne pas le faire. Après, en Angleterre, ça aurait sans doute marché, mais en Europe, je pense que ça aurait été un peu mal pris. C'est un peu raide. Hein? Yeah. That was proposed but rejected. Yeah. Yes, because it. Yeah. So let's have a look at some of the arguments that were used. Now, of course, the British are famous for being humorous. Some French people are humorous too, but I've never met any. So this is the joke, of course. Brexit would mean having to organise 27 separate song contests with the other EU countries. Of course, it's a joke, yeah. Some of the arguments were humorous. Well, this one. Uh, For the negative campaigning is something very, very common in the United States, where the poster just says the opposition are very bad. Yeah. Poorly negative campaign. It's not so common in Britain or in France, but the campaign was very, very vicious. It was very, very, c'était très méchant, la campagne, which is unusual in British politics. So there really, it was really very hot, high temperature of political debates or insults, which is interesting. It was also very bizarre because traditionally, British people never used to talk about Europe because it's boring. What's interesting about Europe, yeah? And suddenly the British were fighting each other about Europe. It was kind of very strange. And there they are, you know, in and out, you know. And of course they're saying, you know, death. Yeah, you will die if you vote the wrong way. So what were the arguments for remaining in the European Union? Of course, I'm not saying they are true. They might be true or not true, but the people who were in favour of Remain said, we will have peace and we will have prosperity if we remain in the European Union. Now, those are difficult things to promise in the world at the moment, you know, but yeah, they were doing what they could. So let's have a look at some of what they said. Here's an example. This is a poster. More jobs and opportunities. A brighter future in Europe. Yeah, so this is a Remain poster. Remaining in the European Union will create an extra 790,000 UK jobs by 2030. So this was an argument. This is difficult because nobody knows what will happen before 2030. It's just it's a little bit tiré par les cheveux because you know, 2000, anything could happen before that, you know. But you know, that's the argument, and this is the source, the Centre for Economic Business Research. Yeah, so these are arguments about stay in Europe because there will be more jobs. Obviously, an important question for people. People are very worried about unemployment, just like you are. You know, these are big questions. Here you have a left-wing poster for Remain. Yeah, stay in Europe to change Europe. Well, that's an interesting thing. Yeah? So this gentleman, who's a very left-wing member of the Labour Party, who's saying, what he's saying really to his people, say, yes, it's true that the European Union is not democratic enough. It's true that the European Union is too neoliberal. But if we stay in it, we can be part of change. So the Tories want a Europe of austerity, inequality and runaway corporate power. I want a Europe of solidarity, workers' rights and environmental justice. Let's have a Europe-wide clampdown on corporate tax dodgers, l'évasion fiscale, and use the money to end austerity, provide quality jobs and build a more equal society, a real social Europe. Donc, pour une Europe sociale, on a vu ces arguments en France aussi. Okay, so you could have conservative posters for Remain or socialist posters for Remain. That was all about. What else do I have here? Yeah, a left-wing leader of the Labour Party in favour of Remain there. Otherwise, more general arguments. For 60 years, the European Union has been the foundation of peace between European neighbours. After centuries of bloodshed, oui. Ça fait des siècles qu'on se tue, et puis depuis 60 ans, on n'a plus le fait. Ça doit être à cause de l'Union européenne, peut-être. Okay. Yeah. So very straightforward. Also, beautiful blue. This is the European flag waving, etc. So these are obviously there are different kinds of campaign. Yeah. Because of course. There were television documentaries and pamphlets and articles trying to give a series of reasons, but there are also somewhat more plus communication que débat, yeah, more on both sides. On both sides, you have this try to get a positive image of your side very quickly using the methods of public relations, yeah, la com que vous connaissez un peu, je crois. And this is also an argument for Remain, a poster for Remain, I'm in. But it's an amusing poster. It's an amusing poster because these are some of the people who were for Brexit. Some of the Conservatives were for Brexit. Say, do you want to be left alone on a small island with these men? Yeah, so it's a joke, but it's an argument saying, really saying that this is Nigel Farage, the leader of the United Kingdom Independence Party. This is Boris Johnson, who was a leading Conservative member, but for Brexit, and everybody knew that he would be Prime Minister if the referendum voted Brexit, but he isn't. Everybody thought he would be Prime Minister, and he made a couple of big mistakes at just the wrong moment, and so Theresa May got in. So, jokey arguments. These are some of the arguments and posters for Remain, and again, sometimes humorous, sometimes calm, and sometimes more sophisticated. Yeah, again, I'm in. This is a rather it's a serious argument. Once you are out of the European Union, you cannot change your mind again. But they are making it a little bit more melodramatic. If you pull the pin out of the grenade, yeah, of course that you will be rather unhappy. So it's an emotional argument, really, but it's de bonne guerre. Huh? It's a meme, c'est de bonne guerre. But obviously, it's more an emotional argument. And there were quite a lot of emotional arguments around. I'm not opposed to emotional arguments; they are inevitable. But you see some of them here. This one, for example. Yeah. How would your grandchildren vote? There's the little grandchild. Yeah, you don't have grandchildren, but neither do I, but I'm old enough to have grandchildren. I like that. Yeah, again, there is a serious argument, yeah? If you vote leave, life will be worse for your children and your grandchildren. That's a serious argument. But again, it could be considered to be a little bit manipulative, yeah? Using the little children involved here. And sometimes just more straightforward ones. We're fairer, safer, and greener in Europe. Le Parti Vert. The Green Party in Britain is very small. I think they have one member of parliament, but still they have a certain presence in public debate. So what about the other side? Those are the arguments for Remain. What about the arguments for leaving? And I think I already mentioned to you there were some general arguments for leaving. And then there were some conservative arguments for leaving and some socialist arguments for leaving. So it was quite a divided thing. There's certainly no unity involved. Sometimes you had just straightforward, kind of amusing things that keep calm and vote for Brexit, yeah, using the traditional thing. Of course, I think the aim of posters like this is just to remind people to go and vote, really. To remind people that if they're for Brexit, they must go and do it, you know. Because, of course, one of the problems in all elections or referendums is a lot of people stay at home. Making your people not stay at home is part of the game. So you keep calm and vote for Brexit. But also the serious part of this is that there were a certain number of panicky arguments around. So there's a keep calm and vote for Brexit. Yes, and a rather standard one there, yeah. No to the European Union, yes to the wider world. So this is a reprise, really, of the 1975 arguments that the European Union is in the opinion of the people who wrote this poster, the European Union is not internationalism. It's a restricted club of countries, and so it's not going to help many other countries around there vote to leave. And of course, most importantly, of course, the Twitter and the Facebook, which are essential today. Although, as I understand it, Facebook is now for old people. But old people are important too. I think Instagram is more what you need. But they all had Instagrams as well. Here you have now some of the posters of the right wing. And in fact, this is the United Kingdom Independence Party. So this is a party which was established on the basis, about 10 years ago, on the basis of being anti-European Union. But also, it's not a fascist party. It's not like the National Front. But it's a xenophobic party. It's a xenophobic party. And here, this was a very controversial poster, because as you can see, the EU has failed us all. L'Union Européenne nous a trahis. We must break free of the EU and take back control. And of course, the poster, I think it's fairly clearly, is fundamentally racist, yeah? That there's this danger. Millions of immigrants are coming, you know, be careful, you can stop them. Vote for Brexit. This was controversial. It's not actually clear where this photograph was supposed to be taken, but I think the idea is that the European Union will make more and more immigrants come to Britain. That's the idea. Yeah. Pretty horrible poster. Ça c'est quelqu'un qui essaie de casser le message. Je sais pas ce qu'il fait. Quelque chose de similaire, mais sans cette photo affreuse. Yeah. Again, United Kingdom Independence Party, far right, extreme right. Yeah, 26 million people in Europe are looking for work. And whose jobs are they after? Your jobs, yeah? Vous allez perdre votre boulot parce que les chômeurs européennes viennent chez vous. This is not based on serious statistical work. Yeah. So again, very emotional thing, but very. I don't think it was very enjoyable being Polish or Romanian in Britain and seeing these in the streets. You know, you walk out of your house and you get them into the streets. One left-wing cartoonist did a parody. Here's a parody. Yeah. Non, au lieu de breaking point, hating point, yeah, donc, l'autre affiche est marqué point de rupture, et donc là c'est simplement point de haine. Yeah, so, donc il lui présente comme un pauvre con qui déteste le monde entier. I just time them to look for the left-wing arguments for leaving. The first one was to look at how the left-wing arguments for leaving. First was to look at how the European Union had treated certain countries. And the example was often Greece. On the left in Britain, people considered that the European Union crucified the Greek people and imposed a very harsh austerity. 3 or 4 years ago, when there was the protocol. Yeah, so this is an argument that the European Union is neoliberal and is against many positive things. So this is a joke, of course, and it's China who is receiving a phone call from Greece. It's Greece, sir. They want to know if you're interested in buying what? Buying Greece. Yeah. So that the joke is that Greece was obliged to sell Greece because of the European Union. And it's true that, for example, the European Union obliged Greece to privatize and to sell national assets on a large scale. So that's one of the arguments. European Union leaders obliged Greece to privatize a large section of its public services and to make deep cuts in social budgets and pensions. This was one of the left-wing arguments for leaving. The second one was that left-wing people sometimes said, look at all the terrible tragedies in the Mediterranean, all the refugees drowning in the Mediterranean. This is because of the European Union's policies on frontiers. And so, far from being representative of internationalism, they are very hard. And here is a little piece about the Syrian refugee crisis. Yeah, yeah. There are 1.1 million Syrian refugees in Lebanon. Yeah, 136,000 in Egypt, and a very small number in the European were allowed to come to Europe. Yeah, so a criticism of refugee policy was the second left-wing argument for leaving. And here is the campaign for the left Brexit, Lexit, left Brexit, Lexit. La campagne a mené à l'invention de pas mal de vocabulaire un peu affreux. And there is a left-wing. left-wing newspaper, Socialist Worker, c'est un petit peu le Olivier Besancenot de l'Angleterre, si vous voulez. So, c'est un petit peu différent. Devant les supermarchés le samedi, vous voyez les gens qui vendent Socialist Worker. Et donc là, c'est « Vote Leave, say no to Fortress Europe » was a left-wing argument for leaving. And the final left-wing argument for leaving is this poster here. And you can see here you have Business Europe, and here you have the European people. And of course, you understand the message, and this is that Business Europe is doing secret and immoral things without talking to the European people. Yeah, this is the idea that trade negotiations between the European Commission other countries are carried out, firstly, in secret, and secondly, by people who are not elected. The European Commission is not elected. Yeah, so this is another criticism of the European Union, of course. But I prefer cartoons because it's a little bit more amusing. Okay. So the argument, final argument then, lack of democracy. Negotiations carried out by the European Union with other parts of the world are often carried out in secret by unelected representatives. Thank you very much for listening. That's enough for today. Next week, the referendum results. And do go and have a look at the blog where you will find fascinating information.